Morning. As Patrick said, Glenn Mays couldn't make it. I got an email last night about 10:30 asking me to do this because a student who Glenn had asked to do it got ill and had to leave the conference. So I've seen this one more time than you have, so hopefully I can do it justice. the title of our... But I do feel some... I have some knowledge of this. I've worked with Glenn on the PBRNs at UK, and also we have a state practice-based research network, KFRN, which is our Kentucky research network that I've worked with extensively. So I think that I might be able to do it justice. And the title of our presentation is The Science of Public Health Practice Using PBRNs for Implementation Research in Public Health Settings. So really this is kind of hopefully using PBRN research to kind of do some translational stuff that will actually improve practice. And this is kind of one of those big kind of macro-contextual things. Less than half the population at risk is reached by various evidence-based things that could improve their health, like smoking cessation, aspirin use, flu vaccination, things that might control hypertension, and other things. That suggests that there is a real need for evidence-based programming in public health. And then there's kind of this broader question of why study public health practice, right? Well, the IOM, their 2003 report, The Future of the Public's Health in the 21st Century, said essentially that while they would have liked to provide specific guidance on the types and levels of various things like workforce and infrastructure and resources that could be used to improve health, or the delivery of health services, the evidence wasn't there. So really that suggests, again, there's a need for evidence that really informs practice. and again, the IOM also said that it was critical, the need of data was critical to protect and promote the public's health. So one of the ways we use to kind of, one of the methods we use to look at kind of the system-wide variables and how the variation of those variables impact health is Public Health Services and Systems Research, or PHSSR. PHSSR is defined kind of generally as a field of inquiry examining the organization, financing, and delivery of public health services at the local, state, and national levels. And most importantly, the impact of those activities on population health. Again, it's kind of supposed to be a translational enterprise. There's also a policy imperative to kind of study the public health system. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010 actually had in it dedicated funding for PHSSR, Section 4301, the in general section you see, shall provide funding for research in the area of public health services and systems. So there's kind of this recognition at the governmental level that there's a need for this kind of research to help advance practice. So, again, one way to kind of do translational research is to use a practice-based research network. A PBRN essentially is kind of a partnership between practitioners and researchers, whether they're in academia or maybe some private organizations, you can see in the model there, the practitioners and researchers kind of work together to identify common questions of interest at top bubble there. Then ideally, the researchers support the practitioners and kind of they work together to apply rigorous research methods to answer those questions, right? There's exchange of data between the researchers and the practitioners. Usually it goes from practice to research in one direction first, then once we translate it, it goes the other way, right? So we get this data exchange, we analyze and interpret it, we kind of say, okay, this is what we've got, what does it all mean? Then perhaps most importantly, we translate it, right? We apply it to practice, so we use it to improve practice. You see, we've got kind of a feedback loop there. Once we take these lessons and we apply those to practice, we generate new questions, right? So it's really just kind of a self-reinforcing cycle. We're always ideally generating these new questions that are relevant to practice and then helping to answer those questions through this kind of practice/research partnership. And as far as kind of where the particular public health PBRNs are in the United States, in 2008, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation funded an initial cohort of public health PBRNs. They gave them some seed money basically to get off the ground and kind of develop their infrastructures, right? You see that Washington State was one. We had one in Colorado, one in Kentucky, one in North Carolina, one in Massachusetts. And then 2010, they released funding for another round, where you got Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Ohio, New York State, Florida, and I always miss that one right there. And then we've got some affiliate PBRNs. Essentially what happened is that these PBRNs were so well received, and I think they recognized they did some really good research, that we had some states start PBRNs in the absence of seed money, right? So California, Texas, and some other states created their own PBRNs. And all these PBRNs are eligible for PBRN funding that we release periodically. The foundation releases through the National Coordinating Center for PBRNs, which is located at the University of Kentucky. So even the affiliate PBRNs are still eligible for this funding. So there are certain key elements to a public health PBRN. The first element is you need to, for the most part, the PBRNs we've seen to date that have been successful have a state or local agency to serve as a convener. Often it's not, more often than not, it's not an academic institution. It's actually a local or state department of public health where they kind of convene those entities together, right? I think one of the things that Glenn would tell you is that it's very important that a PBRN isn't seen as an academic endeavor, and that it's seen as a truly practice-based activity. So really having a state or local agency to serve as a convener is a critical part of that. And ideally, you have multiple practice settings available for study, right? Because one of the things you want to do when you're doing like practice-based research is you want to be able to say, okay, these are apples and apples. How do we compare these things and how do they differ, right? It'd be hard to do transnational research if you're doing it in just one setting. So ideally, you have multiple departments, which might have multiple kind of some varying characteristics you can study to see how those characteristics impact health outcomes. And you have to have a champion within each practice site. One of the things we've kind of observed with, particularly in our Kentucky PBRN, is unless you have someone in that department who is really dedicated to advancing research, to really using research to inform practice, to kind of being your liaison between kind of research or academia and practice, it's hard to get in touch with those people. Because, you know, people who work in health agencies, they're already overworked. They're underpaid. So really you have to have someone who's passionate about this, who wants to spend the extra time to actually make it work, to make it work. And then, again, it helps to have a research partner with design and analysis experience. You know, for the most part in public health, at least in Kentucky, our practitioners are so involved in service delivery every day, they don't really have time to either develop or kind of maintain expertise in design and analysis. Those of us who work in academia or in research, we do that every day, so really it's kind of a natural marriage. And you have to have regular communication among participants. That's the key to any success. I think the success of any group endeavor. And it helps to have kind of the low hanging fruit initially, feasible and relevant research practice, at least initially, your research projects. You know, the best, I think, way to promote success is through success. So taking kind of this low hanging fruit and really using that and showing practitioners and researchers that the model works is a nice way to advance the model. And as far as those PBRNs I showed you on that first map, right, kind of how do they break down? What piece of the pie is kind of, what participants make of each piece of the pie, right? Almost half of the participants are local government agency employees, okay? 48%. 27% are part of an academic institution, right? 11% are part of a state agency. 7% are part of a professional organization. In Kentucky, our PBRN is actually housed through the Kentucky KPHA, which is the Kentucky Public Health Association. So it's not located at the state or in the college. It's located actually in this kind of separate entity. And the nice thing about that is it kind of makes it immune from political pressures on either end of the spectrum, if that makes sense. Then kind of the other category is 6%, and then federal agency employees make up 1%. And as far as kind of relevant the relevant roles played by participants in PBRN activities, the three ones we found to be most, I think, relevant and we hear most often is they help others apply findings, right? They apply them internally. They also disseminate those findings. So really PBRNs are used as a way to provide assistance, to improve your own performance, and then kind of disseminate the message rather widely. And a lot of dissemination we find happens actually at the local level or at the state level through state public health agencies and things like that. Like in Kentucky, we have a KFRN newsletter we send out to all the members of KPHA. So every 3 months they get a newsletter saying, you know, kind of what our practice-based research has done to date or found to date. as far as like what people expect to be the benefits of PBRN participation, we found that steering research to relevant questions, which kind of is the main purpose of the PBRN, is a particularly relevant one. Identifying innovations in practice, again, this is hopefully what research does. Not only identify, but also kind of create innovations in practice is a relevant one. And then we've got kind of this bottom cluster where they demonstrate accountability, raise awareness about practice, and also improve practice. It's kind of your, for lack of a better word, quality improvement domain there. So I know recently Glenn did kind of a network analysis of 5 cohort 1 PBRNs to kind of examine their structures for evidence production and translation and kind of how some variance in that might impact perceived benefits of the PBRN. You can see they look very different. The one on the top left is a very kind of integrated, clustered one. The one on the far right is clearly very different than that. So you can see they have very different structures in spite of their kind of common mission, I guess. Then we kind of looked at kind of which network structures were associated with the perceived benefits of peer participation, right? So you see network density has a positive coefficient in the significance. So as a network gets more dense, okay, the perceived benefits of association with that network go up, right? That's what we kind of want to have happen. People think it actually works better. Centrality has a negative coefficient, right? So as networks get more centrally located, get kind of more, I guess for lack of a better way to explain it, kind of top-down, you have negative coefficients. So really, the closer you get to the middle of that central network, your perceived benefit actually decreases, right? That's kind of not the direction you want to see it go in. Then practice orientation, which is no surprise. If you have more practice orientation, your perceived benefit goes up. That would seem to make sense. So as far as the implications and next steps of this research, I think the evidence is early but clear that PBRNs can serve as an effective mechanism for implementing and disseminating research in public health settings. Some of the network analysis suggests that the structure of PBRN networks may shape the distribution of benefits and the cost of research participation. So kind of, you know, is it worth my time, essentially? And as that kind of centrality thing noted, practice partners who are more marginal in their networks appear to benefit most, right? People who haven't been traditionally engaged in practice might actually benefit more from being in a PBRN or haven't been engaged in research. And as far as for sustainability, this is, I think, probably the take-home message. PBRNs must ensure that practice partners realize tangible benefits from research participation. Those can include decision support, you kind of helping them apply evidence or gather evidence to apply evidence, quality improvement, improving how well they work, accreditation, you know, Domain 10 and FAF, and the FAF standards kind of revolves around generating and applying research. This is clearly a natural marriage for PBRNs. And then efficiency. If you can improve your decision support, improve your quality improvement, then ideally you get more efficient as well. For information, this is Glenn's contact information. I think that is it. Any questions? Comments?
How does this differ from your academic health department setups at some...
I think that it's kind of the next extension of that, if that makes sense. I think the beauty of the PBRN, if you do it right, though, it is not seen as an arm of academia. It's seen kind of more as a... Ideally, it involves a larger number of partners, if that makes sense. I think, and this is kind of a... I think public health is mostly local, right? I mean, it's always kind of done in this local context. In Kentucky, there's to some extent disconnect between what we do in academia and what they do in practice. And there's almost like a perception that the academics don't necessarily understand nor value what the practitioners have to say, and vice versa. I think the PBRN is a great way to span that, to bridge that gap, if that makes sense.
Good morning. My name is Victor. Now, first of all, I'm interested in program planning and evaluation.
Yes.
Now, for an evaluator, how would I apply PBRN if I'm evaluating my research findings?
Well, I think that we have used our PBRN, and again, this is our state, to do some evaluation of quality improvement projects already. Again, research and evaluation, there's always kind of a murky distinction between the two, right? But I think having a practice-based research network is a nice way to, I think that the advantage of it is you've got these evaluators who are more than likely researchers, right, who are already familiar with the context in which this stuff happens, but they're not specifically a part of it. Does that make sense? So they can be independent evaluators, but they have a lot of kind of local knowledge. So there's some advantage to that, I would say. Go ahead. Well, I guess I can speak to what we're doing in Kentucky because we've kind of reached the end of our seed money. I guess we've kind of tapped it out, right? And I think that's one of the big questions with the PBRNs is fine. You know, you've funded these burgeoning organizations. You've given them a relatively modest amount of money to kind of develop themselves. I mean, when you get to think about indirect, when you get to the bottom line, it wasn't a whole lot of cash, right? So then. You've got a very short time to go from this is kind of I've been created to I need to develop my own sustainable sources of funding. And I think that's going to be a problem we encounter over the next couple of years. This is my own personal opinion. But I do know that and you know as well, that there has been a commitment from the foundation to, I think, fund pea-bearing research for, I think, the immediate future, competitively funded. You know, so I think ideally as PHSSR gets more ingrained into health services research and public health, we might be able to take some of the money from ACCA and use that for practice-based research. I think the struggle we find, and I also work for the National Coordinating Center for PHSSR at Kentucky, the struggle we're finding, or we're kind of encountering is, how do we take this seed money that we've been given to kind of launch this discipline, PHSSR, and translate that or kind of use that as a way to actually find sustainable sources of funding for the research endeavor writ large. So I think that as we make more progress in that respect, you'll find more money available for PBRN research. I firmly believe that the foundation, and I don't speak for foundation, but just my observation, is committed to making these things sustainable because they recognize the value of the endeavor.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. Great.